People who travel to Italy to view its many art treasures will be grateful for what Robert M. Edsel reveals in his latest book called Saving Italy. It's a true story of how monuments, sculptures, and paintings were saved from looting and bombing during the Allied invasion. It's published by Norton, and I'm very pleased that it brings Robert Edsel to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Have all three of your books been about rescuing art treasures during and after the war?
They have. They've been about these heroes, monuments men, museum directors, curators, art historians who volunteered for service during World War II to save these great treasures.
And your first book was called Monuments Men. Who were they?
Well, the first book was called Rescuing Da Vinci, which was a photographic telling of the story. And then the last book, The Monuments Men, focuses on the group and their work in Northern Europe. In fact, that's the book that George Clooney and his team are making the film of right now. Saving Italy tells exactly what took place in Italy.
Are you involved in the making of the film?
Yeah, I've been a consultant to the film, been over there on the set several times, and I'm headed back there in June. It's really exciting. It's an incredible cast.
Is there a clear record of what happened?
Yes, I think so. And the documents of the monuments officers, their reports and things have been on file at National Archives and other places. But the real key to telling the story is through their letters home to loved ones, because those give the description and color about whether they were scared or exhilarated and some of the challenges they faced.
And how did you gain access to those?
Well, some
going to people's attics.
In some cases, yes. We tracked down a lot of monuments officers. I interviewed 17 in the course of my career. Only five are still living today, one woman and four men, but really tracking in their family members, because those letters just don't get thrown away.
The strategy to put together the unit of the Monument Men was decided in the United States before ground operations started with the invasion of Sicily. Were other people involved with trying to save these treasures? Were the Germans? Were the Italians?
Well, the Germans had an art protection unit, but they were only used in areas that they occupied. And so Italy presents a completely different case, because unlike the premeditated looting that's taking place in Northern Europe, Italy's an ally of Nazi Germany for the first 3 years of the war. And when they switch sides in September 1943, the wanton looting and destruction begins. And the monuments officers are on the ground in Sicily fighting to try and get into Naples. And their challenge walking into this cauldron is huge.
Well, they had already looted a lot of Dutch and Flemish art.
Oh, yeah. There'd been extensive looting of Northern Europe at this stage. And, you know, I start the book off telling how close the Last Supper by Leonardo da Vinci came to being obliterated by a bomb that landed 88 feet away, blew out the east wall of the dining hall that it's in.
Who dropped the bomb?
The British did. At the time, Mussolini had just been thrown out about a month earlier, and the Allies were negotiating and hoping to get Italy to switch sides, but the Italians were dragging their feet, and Winston Churchill said, we're going to give them all manners of hell, and so they decided to try and bomb the industrial cities, and the center city of Milan was targeted without anyone discussing the possibilities of damage to cultural treasures.
Well, one of the great treasures of the Renaissance in Padua, Mantegna's great Ovattari frescoes, that didn't escape the bombing.
It did not. And in fact, we came within a hair's whisker from destroying the Scrivani Chapel by Giotto, which would have just been,
also
it would have been a
Padua.
Loss on the scale of the Last Supper.
Well, because many people consider it kind of the first great masterpiece of the Renaissance, or leading into the Renaissance, the pre-Renaissance.
That's right. Well, the monuments officer's first assignment was to try and work with Allied air commanders to target things, to move targeting away from these structures. And unfortunately, with the Aramentani Chapel, they were aiming at a rail yard, and bombs strayed. And this really underscored the importance of these monuments officers having a chance.
Now, Hitler had been an art student and considered himself an art connoisseur. Did he love Italian art?
Yeah, he did. In fact, this idea of him building this Führer Museum in Linz, his hometown, really emanated from his first visit to Florence in 1938. He he's had 7 or 8 day state tour of Italy, starting in Rome. He only had 10 hours to visit Florence, but he allocated two of them to walking through the Uffizi and Pitti Palace. And it was there he realized he saw so many works of art that he'd only seen models of or photographs of. And it was from then that he really decided this great museum was going to take shape.
Was Mussolini as interested as Hitler in preserving the monuments and museums and churches?
No, Hitler. I mean, Mussolini at one point uttered this immortal quote of Italy's got too much art and too few babies. So he was really a very brutish figure and just was uneducated with respect to the arts.
Despite the fact that he invoked the glories of ancient Rome as a part of his own image.
He did. And, you know, I think where Mussolini was concerned, it's the only instance I know of where there was a leader of another country that was actually assisting Hitler with removal of some of the patrimony of Italy by allowing works of art to be exported that otherwise shouldn't have gone.
The German army used propaganda to turn the Italian people against the Allies. What kinds of things did it say?
Well, there was constantly drilling into Italians this belief that American and British soldiers were coming to the shores of Italy to loot these works of art and remove them. Reports that ships were arriving in London and New York that had containers filled with works of art taken from museums. This, of course, was not the case. And General Eisenhower's great vision, I think, was to understand if you really are serious about trying to win the hearts and minds of people, you have to show respect for the things that they value.
Although there was a little bit of looting.
Well, there certainly was. I think we have to get into the issue of whether or not this is premeditated looting or soldiering where people have picked up treasures that are souvenirs. They lost a lot of buddies during the war, and sometimes they didn't know that it had particular value to it.
And they weren't taking huge paintings.
Well, they weren't. I mean, the Monuments Men Foundation, something I created in 2007 that received the National Humanities Medal from the president. Our role has been to not only preserve the legacy of these monuments officers and use it going forward, but also to work with veterans or veterans' families that may have objects that were picked up as souvenirs that they didn't realize at the time have some particular value, whether they're important books or documents, and get those things back.
Now, the Monuments Men were Americans. Did the other allies have similar groups?
The Monuments Men group was about 70% American, about 30% British, men and women. The women were working behind the lines. Average age is in the mid-40s. These guys had established careers. Many of them had families. They had every reason in the world to not volunteer to go do this, but they felt they had a contribution to make. The other countries, as they were liberated, made officers available. And so by the time the end of the war, we had about 13 different countries with representation.
They had to decide what things to protect, for sure.
They did. And the Italians, I think we have to give them credit. I mean, had they not placed scaffolding and sandbags in front of the Last Supper as a precaution that something like what did happen might happen, the Last Supper would have been obliterated. There would be
also
no Da Vinci Code.
Michelangelo's David.
Well, the David was, they couldn't move it out of the Accademia due to its size and weight, so they entombed it in brick. And the front cover photo of the book shows this remarkable image of the David, which people are familiar with even by the silhouette, but there's all this brick and rubble in the foreground where they've removed the protective casing.
The cities of Italy were divided into three different groups. What were the criteria?
Well, the allies behind the lines were trying to evaluate what are the most important cities. So Florence was certainly on that list. Venice was. Rome was bombed early on as a way of trying to focus the attention of the Italians and trying to force them out of the war, and also trying to knock out rail yards that were junction points, really, really critical to getting supplies to the German-Italian forces that had us fighting in Sicily. So it was an effort to try and make sure we had a stable foothold.
My guest is Robert M. Edsel. His book, Saving Italy, The Race to Rescue a Nation's Treasures from the Nazis. What about the role of the Vatican? Did they get involved? Because there's so many art treasures.
Well, they did. I mean, we tell really two aspects of the role of the Vatican. We introduce SS General Karl Wolff, who's largely been overlooked by many people, who is assigned by Hitler to go to Italy in September. He's a senior SS officer there. For 7 years, he was the adjutant to Heinrich Himmler. He's a bad guy. But his assignment initially is to help supervise a plan to remove documents, works of art, etc., from the Vatican and kidnap or kill Pope Pius XII. Wolff understands the role of the Catholic Church in providing structure in Italy, and I think this knee-jerk reaction of Hitler's fades because he was convinced the Vatican was somehow involved with the removal of Mussolini. In the course of time, time after the Italian superintendents in all the major cities have moved the works outside these cities, have moved them around the country. When the ground war comes, this is the one thing the Italians just didn't anticipate. They were anticipating aerial bombing, but by the time they move these things to the countryside, they realize the ground war is going to move up the peninsula. And the only place that appeared safe at that stage was the Vatican, and the Pope issued an invitation for the works to come there.
Well, it is interesting that Pope Pius has been accused of being too soft on the Nazis, and at the same time, the Nazis thought that he was their enemy.
The Pope Pius XII is a controversial figure. I think for every person you find that's a supporter of his, there's one that's critical. And as we went back and did the research, the same was true even in the immediate post-war period as much as it is today, a controversial figure. But there's no doubt that making the Vatican available at the time was a critical decision. And there were priests and archbishops in the other cities that helped. The Allies helped work with the OSS in trying to locate the 735 key works of art that had been taken by the Nazis out of Florence and identify their location.
Another SS officer you write about is Alexander Langsdorff. What did he do?
Langsdorff is one of these German art protection officers, but he's part of the SS. And so as the OSS later referred to him, one half of his soul dedicated to trying to save works of art, but one half dedicated to the SS. And Langsdorff is the one that comes to the decision to remove the works of art that belong to Florence that are in the Tuscan hillside villas and castles, finding themselves in the middle of the battlefield. Later arguing, well, I was trying to protect these works of art, but once they came into the control of General Wolfe, rather than turning them over to the Italians, he kept them because they were part of his deliberate plans to ultimately work up a secret surrender of all Italian forces in Italy to try and save his own life.
General Eisenhower made a statement about saving either human lives or monuments.
He did. In December 29th, 1943, General Eisenhower issued a historic directive stating that it was responsibility not just of commanders, but of all his combat troops to respect cultural treasure so much as war allows. But he made the distinction and said that if it comes down to an object or the lives of our men, the lives of our men count more. And he said, too oftentimes, however, that becomes a distinction of convenience. And so it really raised the bar to a very high level. And what Eisenhower learned from the experience in Italy, the mistakes that were made, this order that was issued 4 months after the landings in Sicily turned out to be issued 3 weeks before the invasion in Normandy. So they went to school on the mistakes in Italy and tried to do better when they got to Northern Europe.
Franz Hart is one of the main American figures in your book. Who is he?
Well, Fred Hart was a 29-year-old art historian of great promise. In fact, any of your listeners that have ever had a course in Italian Renaissance art have probably had the book that he wrote because it's still used today. He was hugely passionate about Italy, a very emotional man, impetuous, creative at the same time, and he's paired up with a 42-year-old portrait painter and professor of art at Yale, Dean Keller, who leaves behind a family and a 3-year-old son that he tries to father and be a good parent to while he's overseas by sending him drawings. He knows he can't read letters, so he does these amazing drawings of him sewing a patch, his Fifth Army patch, onto his uniform, bathing out of his helmet, crossing a river that the bridge is blown out. So it's a real amazing father-son story in that respect.
Well, part of the story is also how many works of art were put into safe places, but many were damaged, weren't they? How long before we saw some reasonable restoration?
Well, we're still seeing restorations today. I mean, anybody that goes to Pisa, it used to be that people visited Pisa prior to World War II to see the Campo Santo, their ancient cemetery built in 1276. But today, people go to see the Leaning Tower. But this ancient cemetery is a remarkable place, 20,000 square feet of frescoes, more frescoes than are on the Sistine Chapel that were damaged because the roof caught on fire. It was a lead roof. The lead melted. The rivulets bled down the wall. And Dean Keller arrived at this horrific situation, but he understood the importance of this, having attended school in Italy, and pressed the alarm bell and literally saved that place. And today they're still reassembling the pieces.
Well, Italy has had other kinds of problems over the years. There was the flood in Florence, and then there was the terrible earthquake,
yes,
in Assisi that claimed one of the great churches with Giottos and other masterpieces?
I say, you know, look, works of art are like are kids, little babies. They need constant supervision and care. You make the great point about Florence in 1966, and these monuments, officers to their credit, loved Italy so much, many of them went back there to help during 1966 and raise money to help the country.
There are still lawsuits involving Jewish art dealers, families with things that have been looted by the Nazis. What happened to the work that was sent to Germany? Has it all been returned?
Well, there's still hundreds of thousands of works of art that were stolen during the war and cultural objects missing. I personally, part of the work of the foundation is to raise visibility about this. I think with the age of the war...
It may be in private collections?
Really? Some are private collections, some are museums, many are in the eastern countries. I mean, wherever veterans were or displaced persons that may have picked up things for survival. So the Saving Italy, and I certainly think the George Clooney film about the Monuments Men, it's going to raise public awareness to a level that's never been raised before, and what we hear from people all the time is we never knew that so much stuff was missing.
Is the Clooney film going to incorporate the other book and this book?
No, the Clooney film will be focused on the last book. I mean, I hope there's a film about Saving Italy. I think there's an incredible story, but it's a different story, and it's really exciting to see the enthusiasm these tremendous actors are placing into telling that story in Northern Europe.
Now, we talked about Americans and the Allies, but of course, Italians played a major role. But
they
Italians
did.
Were on both sides of this.
Well, they did. And the Italians, I think, had a heroic role because after the Mussolini government fell, many of the Italians, they're working. They have no pay. They don't have a government. But they loved art. And they went to extraordinary lengths to move these works around, risk their lives a number of occasions. So it's a team effort. And, of course, the Monuments Men had the support of, in Italy, the U.S. Fifth Army, British Eighth Army. So those were key to their work.
Robert M. Edsel is the... best-selling author of The Monuments Men and Rescuing Da Vinci, co-producer of the award-winning documentary film The Rape of Europa, and he is the founder and president of Monuments Men Foundation. His latest book is called Saving Italy, The Race to Rescue a Nation's Treasures from the Nazis, with this incredible photograph of Michelangelo's David on the cover, surrounded by a lot of brick that saved it from destruction. The book is published by Norton. Thank you so much for being with us.
Pleasure to be with you. Thank you.